This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive. This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
You know, he saw me as an engineer, which is what I was at that time. Mm-hmm. And then that issue came out. And he showed up, and he said, "Who are you?" And because, you know, I was with Julius Lester in the New Yorker, and that was quite a turnaround.
Yeah, I remember that very well.
I'm very proud to be in that picture with you.
Well, thank you very much. It's a good photograph of the two of us. It really is. Nice photograph.
I think we're lying down looking at each other face to face, some crazy angle.
You were bending over.
Oh, well,
yeah.
That's how I achieved my success.
Well, the minute I said it, I knew I should have phrased it differently. One of the things that I also remember with very mixed emotions is covering the Democratic Convention in Chicago in 1968. And it was Dale Minor who set me up to do that. And It was scary times. And it was also the one time I had to function as a news person, which was that I had to file a story by noon, had to file another story by 6, and another story by 10 o'clock, I think it was. And so it was an interesting time to be in Chicago and to be a part of witnessing all the craziness that went on there and which got Nixon elected president. I don't remember who else from BAI was at the station. I know Nancy Allen went to Chicago, but I can't remember anybody else who was there reporting on. Well, I know that I wasn't the only one.
Well, I was there.
Okay.
And,
as a reporter or as a participant?
I didn't make that distinction. Actually, I was ill at the time. I had vile mononucleosis, and speaking of vile diseases, this is WBAI in New York City, and we are broadcasting a celebration of our born-again birthday. WBAI existed for a number of years before it became part of the Pacifica Foundation, but the Pacifica Foundation was given WBAI by Lou Schweitzer, and the story has been told a couple of times on the air. I don't remember. Did you know Lou Schweitzer, Julia?
I didn't know.
I did. I was, in fact, the ambassador from WBAI to Lou for a number of years, and the story is apocryphal, but probably true, is that he bought the station in 59, and there was a newspaper strike, and they got a lot of advertising, and he didn't like it. And so he called up Pacifica, which then was only in Berkeley and Los Angeles. He called up KPFA, and he said, "I want to give you a radio station in New York." And he said, "Get out of here, you're crazy." And they hung up on him. That's the story, anyway. And so he called back, and eventually it was transferred. And he also subsidized the operation of the station for many years, moved us to the Empire State Building. He was a wonderful man. His father invented the process for making cigarette paper, so he wasn't short of cash.
Had something called wet strength paper that
something
they
like
write.
That.
And also they had a patent on the paper that was used in tampons.
Okay. And I wouldn't know about that. But he was an eccentric, but in a good way. He had his own barber shop, so he could get a chair when he needed a haircut. He had his own taxi.
And the barber's name was Lou Schweitzer.
Well, that
he looked around for a barber whose name was Lou Schweitzer, and he said, "I want to buy your barber shop and give it back to you on this condition. Anytime I want a haircut, I can call and come in without an appointment."
He also owned his own gondola in Venice for the same reason.
And taxi in New
York. And owned a taxi cab. But the other thing is a serious side of him. He funded and started the Vera Institute of Justice, which we shared quarters with at 39th Street. And the Vera Institute did a lot of good work in prison reform, getting people out on bail, helping them recover. And so there was a, and he also funded the what became the Lucille Lortel Theater. Lucille Lortel was his wife at the White Barn Theater in Connecticut, and the what was the Theater de Lis where you worked, Bob, for a while. So he was a great man, wonderful kind of grandfatherly character when I knew him, and I loved him. He was terrific. And thank you, Lou, wherever you are, for the gift of this radio station. It's had, I believe, a profound effect on New York and American society through the 60s and 70s and 80s and maybe now. You changed, Bob, you and WBAI changed American society, radicalized a lot of people, helped end the war, helped bring blacks and whites and gays and straights and men and women together, and you deserve the Nobel Prize or something like that, maybe, along with the president.
Thanks, Larry. That's kind of you. If you put in a word with them, and it happens, I'll acknowledge you in my Nobel speech. When those ladies come to my room with the candles on their heads, I'll think of you. We are joined by numbers of other people, including Arun with an enormous, gorgeous birthday cake, and Santa Claus is here. Lavarne, come on over to one of the microphones. And since we were talking about managers, I'd like to introduce a manager who, in my opinion, is a cut above, big cut above. Welcome to our birthday party.
Thank you very much, and how are you this evening, and happy birthday to all of us.
You know all of these dacoits?
I don't know. What did you call them?
James is the only one in the room who knows what that is.
It's an Indian criminal, basically, an Indian highwayman.
Oh, no, there's no
criminal. As in the country of India.
There's no criminal here today. They've taken a holiday.
Some people find that an affront to not be called criminal in this criminal culture.
Well, it's really, really lovely to have everyone here, and we really would like to thank New York for the wonderful contributions that they've made to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City over the years, and on celebrating our 50th. This is just terribly important. I flew in, took the overnight. So I got in about 8 a.m. this morning. So I was just really, really lovely to be here. I was a little busy doing my other CFO duties while listening to the radio, but I wanted to make it in. This is really, really, really lovely.
You're going to be around in the city for a while now?
For at least a week. We have a Pacifica National Board meeting in Washington at the end of the month, so I'll have to fly back to prepare for that. And after that's over, then I will be here for a couple of weeks, I'm sure, after Washington.
I'd just like to say that I have known every station manager since 1965, including Steve Post here, who was manager, and I was manager for a while. And I'm very impressed with you, Lavarne. I really am, and I'm not known for flattery, but you really have a personality and an inner steel that basically saved this place from possible extinction. I mean, you really should go down in the annals of very good managers. And
well, thank you. I really appreciate
we had a
that.
Chance to work together a little bit on Bloomsday. And
right.
Since, and I'm deeply impressed.
Well, thank you very much. I think that the mission of Pacifica and really is what keeps people who have those ethics and that desire for peace and social justice, that's what really keep us on this mission. And I was on the board, on the Pacifica National Board, and I would spend a lot of time, and I have friends who have children, and they would say, "Aunt Varn, how do you spend so much time and you don't get paid?" I mean, that was always the thing.
Tell me about it.
Oh, I, at this point, since I'm general manager, I shouldn't bring that up. That's what they would tell me. So now that they see me working, and although I'm doing two jobs, but I only get paid for one, so I'm still doing the big sacrifice in terms of the total amount of time that I spend. And but the reward, like your compliments, because our mission here is to be here not just for another 50 years, but I think I heard Kathy say another 500 years. But that, you know, in some form of informing the public that we want to be here, and we know that what keeps us on the air are the programmers who, as Bob noted, that do this on a volunteer basis, and we really, really appreciate it, and that and the listeners out there who have been patient with WBAI.
I'd like to point out that the listeners are volunteers too.
Absolutely.
Nobody's forcing them to listen.
and we appreciate that.
They come in out of their own free will and turn their radios on, and we appreciate that.
And Bob will be here in another 500 years, too.
Well, I don't know about that.
I hope so.
Well, thank you, Larry. A long life can be a blessing or a curse, and I'll interpret it
or both
as it develops, and I'll remember who wished it on me.
Yeah, other people who have worked with WBAI and the Pacifica Foundation have made their transition, but we all remember them, and we think that their spirit is what keeps us all going. Like last year, Tony Short, anyone else can chime in and give other people who made their transition. But Tony Short did, and close relatives of other people who are very important to us here at BAI, like Michael G's father passed last year. So, you know, all that spirit is what keeps us going, because that was the positive energy, and I think it's still there.
Well, I wonder whether it would be appropriate to ask you what your plans are for the next year for WBAI.
I think our plans are to continue along the path we're going now. We've had a really, we've tried to get out to the community, really bring people back on the air who the listeners want to hear, and to continue to tell this story so we can continue to build on the story and the success and the mission of Pacifica, which is basically the educational part of it, where we're able to get out there not from any one perspective, and not controlled by anyone, but basically, as we say, the unfettered creative energies of this community. And to allow that to also work with the other stations to really build on it. We've had a couple of things that we've done with other stations, the Robert Knight and Dennis Bernstein, and to do that and to actually also get support and help from other stations in terms of the administrative part. We've had that to happen. So we're really, really trying to build that, not just for BAI, but for the foundation, so that we can get about and not concentrate on some of the things that have happened over the last 10 years, but really get back to the business of programming, you know, working. Also, we have a wonderful archives to actually build the material to go into there, because we go back and pull things from the past, and that has to be replaced, not even replaced, but multiplied, having information and material to put in our archives. And the people are here, the talent is here. We just have to have you concentrate on that versus concentrating on the issue of, you know, will the rent be paid?
Well, I'd like to make a recommendation that we do a remote broadcast to put in a line or go by satellite to Amherst and get Julius to make a contribution once in a while.
Hear, hear.
That's a wonderful idea.
Julius, you could do a program on religion.
Oy vey.
or on folk music, or on the history of the civil rights movement, or on photography. It wouldn't matter. It would be great radio.
Well, thanks, Bob, but I am enjoying not being a public person anymore in any kind of way. I finally have a private life, and I am thoroughly enjoying it and plan to continue that way. So thank you for the suggestion, but I'm going to pass on it right now.
Well, I'll ask you again.
And okay, you can ask me again. I certainly may change.
And when you're in New York City, the invitation is there, and we can have you here, but have you disguised or something.
That would be interesting. That would be interesting.
You could wear an Albert Shanker mask.
We'll do it on Halloween.
So you're welcome, and we really would like to have you here.
Well, thank you. I will certainly keep that in mind.
All right. Great.
My other fortune cookie said, silence is often its own reward.
Oh. Okay. Did you hear about what happened today?
I heard
you want to report down?
Well, what I heard on the news, I'd like to contrast what I heard with what you experienced, okay?
With what?
I'd like to contrast what I heard in New York with your experience, okay? I heard that Mayor Daley was a witness.
That's right. Checks out. It looked like him anyway.
Yeah, and he said that he had no idea that anyone was preventing you people from trying to sleep in the park, or at least it wasn't done with any. He didn't want it done. He wanted you people to get your permits. That was pretty much what was reported, and that was about it.
Yes, it was.
You used to recognize Abby Hoffman's voice.
That consisted of about 5 hours of testimony, but that was about what it amounts to. I think we had something like 55 straight questions objected to, and the objections sustained.
Oh, right, that's true. They did say that. What were the things that were objected to?
Well, they asked them. Kunstler did the cross examining, and he asked them things like, what role he played in the permit decisions, negotiations, what role he played in the telephone strikes and denying, live coverage of demonstrations, and what role he played in, there was a demonstration here about 3 months before in which the police beat up everybody. And there was a huge report on that called the Spalling Commission Report, asked about that, asked him if he had ever said it. At an NAACP convention that there were no slums or ghettos in Chicago. Asked him if he called Ribbicoff. I can't say that whole beautiful thing. You bastard, I can say that, but that's an abbreviation. At the convention. I said, oh, well, you didn't call him that. What'd you call him, you know? What'd you say? And, you know, I asked him to describe what he saw at the convention hall.
Did you subpoena the film of him? Did you subpoena the film of him shouting that?
Film in the,
it would have been good to have
a lip reader there.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
You had the film and the lip reader?
Well, you can't, you just can't say anything like that in court, and not in this court, unless you're ready to stand behind it.
Mm.
Or you're ready, you got to get ready to do a year in prison right off.
Mm.
But there were about 55 questions like that. Do you know Thomas Foran? Thomas Foran is the district attorney trying us, and he helped Mayor Daley present the whole justification for bringing in all the troops called the Strategy of Confrontation, this huge document.
And that was objected to?
If he knew him, oh no, Mr. Daley said, oh, he's one of the finest, ablest young lawyers in all of America. Everybody that he knew, you know, that we would mention, oh yes, he's one of the finest, ablest young men in all of city government. And
do you know Abby Hoffman? Oh, he's one of the finest, ablest revolutionaries.
While this was going on, he didn't answer any of the questions. And then, well, first of all, when he came in, it was a whole new atmosphere. The public starts waiting about 10 o'clock at night each night. Now, in Chicago now, it's about 15 below zero at night. So people are waiting, huddled, outside the federal building, waiting all night to get into our trial. And there are about 175, 200 seats in the trial for the public, of which about 12 of the public are now admitted. And the first row was all corporation counsel lawyers for Mayor Daley's staff. The second row was his precinct captains. The third row was all his family. And way in the back row, if you look careful, you can see the public. And Mayor Daley came in. He came in from a different entrance. because we kept slipping out into the hall to serve him this indictment. We prepared this long thing of everything that's gone on in Chicago from about 1960 up to the recent killings of murders of Hampton and Clark of the Black Panthers. And but there was no way if I tried to get near him, but I got whacked a couple times. He had about 20 personal bodyguards. Now, these bodyguards just came in the court and took over from the U.S. Marshals, and nobody's ever seen this in a court, in a federal court. Now, as soon as the first few questions were asked, we petitioned the judge to declare him a hostile witness. I don't know if you dig all that legal stuff that's going on. Do you understand all that? See, a hostile witness then would mean that we could ask him all these kinds of questions, and he'd be forced to answer, see? But now the judge says, oh, no, he's quite a friendly witness. He's very friendly, you know. Can you imagine Mayor Daley being our friendliest witness? The judge has never said that about a witness. So there was booing.
Julius, I know that you were in Chicago in 1968 for the Democratic Convention, but were you there for the trial?
I was not there for the trial, no. Mm-hmm. No.
Punching people and yanking them out of the gallery. About six people were thrown out in the hall, and I think three or four arrested. Sandy Levinson from New York.
Yeah.
She was arrested. I didn't even know if she was even sitting in the gallery.
Well, there's so much more that we could be playing. But I don't know, somehow it doesn't communicate to party time. James suggests that we play some music, and it's a 6-minute piano piece, he said. That should drive the audience away.
Let's hope so.
Let's see if I can find it here. Talk to yourselves there for a moment. Well,
actually, if you are looking for it, it's on the CD I gave you before that you used for the Ed Goodman report to the listener.
Well, here it is in the ashtray. Oh, well, you have no ashtray in this room.
I hope not.
It's track two in that. And it's from a free music store, one of our wonderful, wonderful regular music concert programs, which was a very relaxed affair.
Hi, ladies and gentlemen. Believe it or not, we're back on the air, and there you are, caught with your pants down out in the hallway, so to speak. All right. The next piece we're going to hear is a piece by Robert Schumann, and fortunately, it's basically a piece that's filled with action, so that even though people are still filing in, single file, please, we will still be able to discern the music.
Sounds like there were mice in the church. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
There are livers and there are... So I don't know if you're into livers. I personally...
The building probably came over to your place. And as soon as they get wind of who you are, they'll be splitting too, because, you know, roaches, despite what you may think, have a little bit of class. Anyway, in the very interesting, extremely boring facts department, somebody here at WBAI, and I won't mention the name just in case, you know, her facts are wrong, and I don't want, you know, people to heap abuse upon her, but one of the producers here at the station sort of poked her head into the office the other day and said,
"Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive." Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.